friendly neighbors. Welcome to the Twiniversity Podcast, a show created exclusively for parents of twins. I am your host, Natalie Diaz, mother of twins, maybe mother of dragons, Twiniversity founder and author of What to Do When You're Having To. I don't know if you've heard about Twiniversity, but basically, our goal at Twiniversity is to make sure that you always feel connected, you laugh at the little things, and we get to teach you a few tricks along the way. And that is what we are hoping to do with today's show. So without further ado, welcome to Twiniversity.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Twiniversity Podcast. I'm so glad you're here today because we are going to be talking about why the NICU should be your happy place. And you're like, Nat, what the heck are you talking about? Like, whose happy place is the NICU? Well, I am excited to tell you that Julie McCaffrey is here with me today from Baby Nav Baby Planners. Julie had a single baby and then, surprise, 18 months later, had her twinnies. Her twinnies spent some time in the NICU, born at 36 weeks, 4 days. And we are going to hear about their journey. Now, don't forget, we've talked to Julie before about all the things that we've forgotten to do to prepare before our twinnies get here. But now we're going to have a very, very open and honest discussion and positive discussion about the NICU, which is not something that you hear every day. And in case you guys don't know about me, we were in the NICU for a very long time, not very long in relation to other people, but I had my twinnies born at 34 weeks on the day. And my chick was there for 31 days and my dude was there for 14. So we're going to talk about your twins in the NICU, getting on a schedule in the NICU, and so much more. So without further ado, let's meet Julie. Hey, Joel.
Hi, Nat. How are you?
I am very good. Thank you for joining us again.
Thank you for having me here. We had so much fun last time. I'm excited to talk about the NICU today.
I was going to say, I'm glad that it wasn't so torturous for you that you're like, I'm going to go back.
It's super fun hanging with you. We can totally nerd out on this stuff. I love
know.
It.
That should be like our next topic should just be like hashtag twin gear nerding out and just
totally.
Be our open conversation. Like the whole Joe Rogan thing. Like I love his, his podcast is about nothing. It's just him and his friends talking about whatever's hot topic. So today our hot topic is all about the NICU. So tell us a little bit about like your intro to the twin world life.
Yeah, my intro to the twin world life came quick and hard and loud. And so I had a single baby and then 18 months later, I had a set of twins. So when my other guy was 10 months, I found out that I was having twins. And when I went for their 20 week anatomy scan, but for us, it was at 19 weeks. We found out that we found out my son had a little extra something special. And then at 26 weeks, we found out that my daughter did as well. So we knew that we weren't just going to have a twin journey. Mm-hmm. We were going to have a twin journey where we were going to have some time in the NICU, in hospitals and things like that. So, we got two big surprises all at once for us heading into the world of twins.
Surprise.
Surprise.
What was the scan that you, like, what was the particular scan? Was it like blood work that they found something or it was a literal scan, like a sonogram?
It was literally like my, your 20 week anatomy scan where they go and just say everything's okay. And my son has, it's uncommon to have the three heart defects that he has all at once. And so it was very clear, even to just a standard tech, it wasn't even, a perinatologist, that something was very wrong with his heart. Mm-hmm. And so we had that scan and they really thought my daughter was fine. But because we knew my son's defect was so severe, I had weekly sonograms as well as fetal echocardiograms. So, a lot of twin mommies go through extra sonograms and monitoring, mm-hmm. and I was going through extra. And then at 26 weeks, they actually said, oh, your daughter's heart is actually also has a defect. And so we knew before we delivered, thank goodness, that both of them had very severe congenital heart defects.
Now, what I find so absolutely fascinating is despite the fact that you knew that your twins were going to have so many problems, their NICU stay was significantly shorter than I think most people would anticipate. And they don't understand that all the time, the NICU is the place in the hospital where your babies go to right after delivery. However, if your children have an issue that needs to have further operations down the road, not immediately after delivery, then you may go home for a bit and then go into the PICU, which is the pediatric intensive care unit. So they are two different places. And so many people think that an infant would go back into the NICU. But once you're discharged from a hospital, you don't go. It is very rare that you would ever go back into the NICU. Okay, so like towards the latter part of your pregnancy, you knew that the NICU was going to be part of this picture. What did the hospital do to prepare you for that?
You know, the hospital told us we would be there. You know, that to be really honest, I don't know that the hospital, I don't know that they prepared me as much as other people did that had been in the NICU. You know, it was other moms saying to me, hey, this can maybe feel overwhelming, or here's some things you have to think about. The hospital, quite honestly, didn't do a lot. And I think for them, like, no blame to them. I think their concern was taking care of my babies. And you kind of forget, like, you carried these babies and you're, you know, they have your heart, but you're a little bit second to them taking care of the baby. So they didn't prepare us too much. So I really had to look to other people who had been in the NICU to understand what was about to go down.
Do they give you a tour of the NICU?
No, I never received a tour of the NICU.
Me neither. Or for us, when we knew things were happening, they actually had the docs from the NICU came to my room.
Oh.
And they were like, okay, Ms. Diaz, here's what we anticipate happening. So because you're delivering early because of my preeclampsia and HELLP syndrome, because of that, they came up to the room and I could remember, I believe his name was Dr. Green. I'd have to double check. No, that wasn't Green. Green was a different guy. But he came up and he's like, this is who I am and this is what I'm going to do. And it's a shame you won't be able to remember my name, is what he said when he met me. But they did give us like a little bit of prep while we were in the hospital, which I thought was great. Absolutely
smart.
Great. But it was only, truly, Jewel, it was only like a few hours. It wasn't like days before. They're like, here's what's going to happen.
Yes.
So I never also got to take my hospital tour because I was already admitted into the hospital. And I, like a psychotic expectant mom, was standing by my doorway saying, I was supposed to be on that tour as I watched everybody pass by. And I'm like, they're treating me really nicely here. Because I really thought that I would make it further. So I had booked my hospital tour, but I think it's important that you do. So now you seem like this is still going to be like a negative thing, right? But we're going to talk about that. Yeah, it's certainly not the most positive, but truthfully, Jewel, in hindsight, the memories that I have of the NICU are actually really positive.
Oh, they're absolutely positive because you are surrounded by, and NICU nurses, in my mind, have a special place in heaven or somewhere. They, you know, the relationships you build with them, but just the care that they give your babies every day. And you do get to see your babies hopefully thrive and improve. And every hour there's little changes and you are there with them. And so it really can still be a very happy place. Mm-hmm. I mean, watching them take turns for the better and improve in the NICU and seeing my babies get put into the same bassinet into the NICU and watching them get better after that. I mean, I have so many little flashes of memories when I think of the NICU that are all really actually really positive because you're moving forward with them.
Yes.
You really are. It's a place where you move forward with them.
And they're so tender and they're so generous with their time. And I say statues is where I'm going with it. There should be like a whole line of statues in the center of Central Park for all of our New York City NICU nurses and every major park throughout the country. That is who, it's such an under acknowledged profession, but hands down one of, I think, the most critical. Well, as says somebody who's been in the NICU, right? So what do I know?
Yes. And when
nurses.
And when I was in the NICU, my daughter immediately after birth was taken into a cath lab and had surgery within 30 minutes of being born. Mm-hmm. And so at the NICU where we were, there's actually an even like down at the very, very end, and it's enclosed off a little more, is the really sick baby NICU.
Yeah.
And we were there. And the nurses that were there, a lot of them had been NICU nurses for like 20 years or more. They were the most veteran, patient, unbelievable. Like I cried when I left this NICU nurse that had every, you know, they stay with a baby as long as they can.
Yes.
And so for 3 weeks, she was with my daughter the whole time we were there, is, you know, her 4 days a week, she was there with her. I cried leaving her, like, how was I going to do this without her? Because she was such a sounding board and such a pillar of strength for me so many times, because she understood in a way that nobody else could understand what I was going through.
Did you know my nurse in the NICU home was Liz? She was my like primary nurse the majority of the time. I actually acknowledged her in my book. Out of all the people, I was thinking back of all the people that I want to thank for, you know, getting me to this point. It was definitely her. I mean, she set the foundation for such outstanding support that it was, I just guess I assumed that everybody would give me that support, but she was so, so unique. So yeah, so that we clearly you could see that Julie and I could both look back on our times in the NICU and be like, yes, you know what? I have some fond memories. But when you're in the eye of the NICU storm, it doesn't seem so positive and it seems so nerve-wracking. And one thing that you talked about before we started recording was the whole day-to-day. So tell me a little bit more about what you mean about like preparing for day-to-day.
I think the thing to prepare for the day to day is that, you know, when you or I are in the hospital, it does feel day to day. When you're in the NICU, it really is hour to hour. You know, you're waiting for the next feeding or the next time someone's going to change a diaper or the next temperature change or the next round of doctors or the shift of the nurses. It really changes hour to hour, and they can, you know, take a medicine down in an hour. You can go for a scan and, and then, you know, lose the PAP machine for the CPAP machine for the oxygen in an hour. And so time feels very different in a NICU. But, you know, you do have to expect a few setbacks. And I think it's smart to prepare yourself that every hour it's not going to, you know, leap forward, that there might be some setbacks. But when you have both babies, I mean, when you have both healthy babies at home, when you have two twins at home, time is crazy. But when you have two that you're trying to keep, when you have two in the NICU that you're trying to keep track of, everything that everybody's told you, you know, for me, having a notebook, just so that I would take notes while the doctors would do their rounds. I would take notes of questions that I had. I would refer back to those. You know, that kept me a little bit sane and made me that I was sort of like keeping track of things. But, you know, you can participate. I think that's one of the things that people worry about is like, you know, you're sort of a bystander in the NICU, but the nurses will encourage you as you feel comfortable to participate. Sometimes it's diapering. You know, I remember because my daughter was so ill, she couldn't be moved. And so diapering wasn't something I could do. But the nurse would have me take her temperature every time they did vital checks.
Aww.
And it was such a, like, I could take her temperature. Yes. I could stick the little thing under her little armpit. And it felt like a huge thing for me to be able to do. When my daughter started eating, she ate through a feeding tube. And so it was me pouring my pumped breast milk into her feeding tube. And I felt really like I was participating in her care. And I think that really makes you feel involved and connected. It's a way to bond with the baby while the baby is in the NICU, is to sit there. And so to be able to kind of take care of both the babies can be a really great feeling, that it's not just about those every hours of the doctors. It's really about you starting to care for your twinnies.
Oh, man. I could clearly remember. All right, so let's talk about how do we make the NICU our happy place. My first tip to you guys is going to be all about music. So I remember that we were there through the holidays. So my twins were born on December 16th. So of course, very oddly, you know, clearly unexpected. But whenever the nurses would play holiday music, I could tell you instantly that everybody in that NICU perked up, because typically you don't hear, you know, have a holly jolly Christmas. That wasn't a typical thing. You usually hear the beeps and the sounds and, you know, the oxygen machines and other things. And it does become white noise after a while. I will tell you that those beeps, you start to hear less and less and you focus more and more on your babies. But being able to have that Christmas music was just extraordinary. And then I'm like, why don't I just bring my headphones? Like, why am I waiting for them to play Christmas music.
Yeah.
When I could be celebrating my own little holidays or whatever, just listen to some Zeppelin or whatever the heck I was in the mood for that day to put me, bring me up or put me down. So I'm going to say definitely something that made the NICU one of my happy place, which I think is why I have such positive memories, is because they were like, yeah, totally. Bring your headphones in, get comfortable and sing to the babies. And I would even drop one of my little earbuds to my chest so that whoever was in contact with me could rock out. It's crazy, but I do feel like it had an effect. The music
of course it did.
To is very weird. It's not a typical 13-year-old music. Yeah, today in the car, we were listening to like the White Stripes and then some like new hip-hop artist that I had never heard of. But I was like, ooh, the White Stripes made it in there.
They did.
Pretty crazy. So what's something that you did over there? Or did you have music? I should ask you about that first.
You know what? I didn't do music, which is, I'm such a music person. I'm surprised listening to you say that. I'm like jealous that I didn't do that. But I do remember the nurses doing that. So my twins were born on February 12th. And we came in on Valentine's Day. And the place was covered in hearts.
Oh.
And every little incubator and every little bassinet had hearts all over it and drapes of hearts. And there were cupcakes. And it was like we had a little Valentine's party for everybody. And, you know, it was like little things like that, that you're in this tiny little place and the world is going on around you. The world keeps moving. Everybody keeps doing their thing. And so we definitely had that. You know, I was a big, I couldn't do skin to skin. I could with my son, but I couldn't do skin to skin contact with my daughter. And so a happy place for me was, again, it was kind of like having things that I felt like I could do. And so every night when I would leave, I would take something home and I would sleep with it in my shirt. And then every morning when I would come back, I would put that in her bassinet. And it was like I was giving her my scent. Yes. It was like she always had this fresh thing of my scent. And it was finding ways for me to connect with her felt so like, just felt so nice. It felt so good to, it felt so good to be there with her. You know, other things for, and this may sound strange actually, but getting a really good system of me pumping my breast milk, I felt really good about getting that system in place because again, I felt like it was something that I was really doing and I was doing it for them. And like, no one wants to sit with their shirt off in a strange, weird, empty hospital room, like pumping with that pump. But when I would come back with those two things with breast milk, and, like deliver it, it felt like I was like, delivering medicine. It made it my, I don't know, it made me
you
really
were.
Happy.
You were delivering medicine. That was the baby's perfect cocktail of snacks.
Yes. So that made me feel really good. Like I would just look forward to going to do that and like deliver that. And I was like so happy. I had my little shelf on the fridge. Everybody gets a little shelf on the fridge. If you are able to pump and put your breast milk there. And I loved seeing mine fill up. I loved delivering that each day.
Oh, it's like a bank and you're making your deposit. And we're like, we're getting richer and richer in breast
milk.
Feeling
like liquid gold.
Oh, it really is liquid gold. It was so challenging. What did you do when you were pumping in the NICU? Did you have like a ritual or something that you had in the NICU? Not at home. Pumping at home was always different for me. But pumping in the NICU, I was very methodical about it.
I was very methodical. And I, interestingly, so as I said, my daughter was... My son was only in the NICU for 4 days, even though he was technically much more sick than my daughter. He was actually fine to go home for a few weeks before we started the other craziness. So he left. And so typically they do not allow that baby to come back to the NICU.
Yes.
But my amazing nurse, there was this little room off of the kind of sick baby NICU, like this down at the end. And it was really the room where the doctors would speak to families, but they would like sneak us in and my husband would keep my son in that room and we would rotate. So I would go out when it was time to feed, I'd go out and get him and I would take him to the room and I had this tray and a basket and I had a whole thing and I would feed him and I would pump for her while my husband sat with her for a little bit. And then I'd go back and drop my little guy back off with my husband. And so that was my routine.
Yeah.
We had this little room that we were kind of hiding out in. But that room was like, it was such a gift to us. But again, it's the nurses. Like they'll find ways to make, like even if you can't figure out a way to make something work, the nurses will find a way to make something work for you. They want your family. They want your whole family to work because if you burn out, then you're not doing the baby any good. You're not doing the nurses any good. So they'll find a way to make things work for you, I found.
Next item on my list of why it was the happy place. We already talked about the staff of having such fantastic nurses. Mm-hmm. But in addition to the nurses, I had really, really, really good doctors. And one thing that I always recommend that people, like in our Twiniversity class, like the number one tip that I give everybody about the NICU is use the staff neonatologists.
Yeah.
A pediatrician, well, your pediatrician that you're going to go see once you get home, they're fantastic. They're great. But NICU babies and premature babies are, they have just a little bit different anatomies and other things that they, that neonatologists have almost like different eyes and ears than a typical pediatrician. So I always recommend that people use the in-house people, and my in-house people were fantastic, but it wasn't for days, Joel. Like once the twins were born, I called like a random pediatrician by the hospital that I had no intention of ever seeing. Cause I was like, oh my God, I never did a pediatrician. I have to do something. And so they're like, the nurses in like the post, like the postnatal floor was like, here's our, you know, the people that are nearby. And I called like a random dude. I have no idea what his name was or where he was from, never met him before. But he was like my kid's first pediatrician, and I had no idea who this guy is. And then in the NICU, my NICU nurse is like, do you know that guy? And I'm like, oh, I have like no idea who he is. And she's like, you could just use the staff people. And I'm like, why did somebody tell me this from the first day? So my staff doctors were freaking rock stars. Did you have anybody in your NICU that were like, these are my rock stars?
Yes. And I, you know, we never really thought about, because we live in Westchester, and because I was considered high risk once we knew what was going on with my twins, I delivered down in the city. And so we had a pediatrician because I had an older son already. And so I wasn't going to have her there. So we really said, okay, you know, we knew we would use the staff there. And they really did, like, there was a different level. I don't want to say it was like a different, it was just a different level of expertise that they had. And I had conversations with them that I never had with my older son. You know, we talked about things in ways that I never talked about them with my older son, but we were talking about these tiny little babies who had just very unique issues. And so they really, and they also know, I think, uniquely how to speak to a parent in that situation. You're not just a new parent, and you're not just a new parent to twins. You're a new parent to twins in the NICU. And I think they have a the staff doctors that we had just had a very calming, lovely, they sat and they would, no one was ever rushing. They would answer questions. They were happy to listen to us. I don't know. I just really appreciated their way they communicated with us, not just what they knew, but how they spoke to us in such a nice way.
Now, you were also talking about the social workers.
Yeah. So for, you know, it's funny. Sometimes you would hear social work, and I think I might've heard this, and I was like, oh no, I don't need a social worker. Like, you know, I had there my husband in it, they very quickly were like, nope, that's not, it's not like that. You know, there's sort of a connotation to that. But what was important for us was my babies went home and needed medical equipment. And what the social worker there did for us was I never had to worry about it. I came home, and that day, the day each of my babies went home, the social worker had worked out a company to come to my home. They went through my insurance. They set up the medical equipment. They got it on a reoccurring basis. You know, they did everything like that that we needed. So we went home with certain medicine. I had to have medicine that I couldn't get at a regular pharmacy. I needed compounded medicine. She, the social worker found a compounding pharmacy that would deliver to me, you know, so she did all of these things that I just didn't even, I didn't know one that I needed. And she made them so seamless and so easy, so that, you know, it felt scary to me at first when they started talking about that I had to have equipment at home, and she took the fear out of it for me because she brought experts in for me to set it up, to show me how to do it. And so I felt at ease with all the equipment that I had.
Oh, and in addition to helping get you set up for the first few days, they're also fantastic people to get you set up for any therapies that you may need.
Yes.
So if your children have issues with feeding, or, you know, issues with their physical development, the social worker in the NICU is going to be like your first point person.
Yes.
For getting anything that you need. And, you know, another thing that I always like to tell people is that a very good majority of twin families have to receive some type of intervention, whether it's physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy. Oh, there's probably so much more. Give a list of therapies. We've gotten all of those. We've been the lucky recipients of many therapies from many different places for many years. But it's normal discussions for us. And having that social worker in the hospital be your first point person is the way to go. So please don't leave your NICU. If you're in the NICU now listening to this, do not leave the NICU without having your social worker's name and phone number and at least saying hi to her before you guys are, dismissed from the NICU. You're discharged. Dismissed now.
You're dismissed.
Thank you, Julie. I could not think of that word. Now, when you were in your NICU, and did you have like a schedule? Like, did you get there at a certain time each day?
What yes.
Was schedule and, like? And that's and for hard us, with your older kiddo at home. How the heck did
right.
you do that?
Well, that was what was crazy. And I was an hour away from where they were in the NICU. And so I had a very strict schedule. So I had an 18-month-old at home that, because I, at the time, worked out of the home full-time in corporate America, I had left him in his daycare so that I didn't want his world to be totally rocked. And so my schedule was, and then at 4 days, one of my twins came home. So my schedule looked at this. I would get up. I would take care of that baby. I would get my big guy ready for school, for daycare. And at 7:30 a.m., we would drop him off at daycare. Mm-hmm. And my husband and I and one of my twins would then head down to the NICU. And I would spend as much time there as I could. And then we would have to leave by 5. So we would, you know, do the very methodical. I mean, NICU nurses are like baby nurses. They're scheduling geniuses. Yes. And so everything moves on that schedule. So we would leave at 5 to get my big guy from daycare no later than 6, which felt like a really long day, but he was so safe and happy there. It was the best option. So then we would bring everybody home, and then I would call the NICU. Is she eating now? Mm-hmm. And so I would feed her at the same time I was feeding the ones at home. And I would do that through the night. Every 3 hours, I would call them so that we did it at the same time. And then I'd wake up the next day and do it again. That's so I did that schedule for 18 days.
We would take a taxi up. I would drop my husband off at his office because for him, we didn't want paternity leave to start until everybody was home.
Smart.
We knew that we would need an extra pair of hands. And so it was actually at the advice of the NICU. Because instantly you're like, okay, I'm starting paternity leave and this is what's going to happen. And they're like, honestly, there's nothing for you to do here.
Right.
They're like, you could come after work. So I would take a taxi up. And for any New Yorkers that are listening, and if you are a wannabe New Yorker, Jewel, you know when you're driving up Park Avenue and then you go into that big MetLife building?
Yeah.
Statue at the base of this building. So now picture this, guys. You're driving up this long Park Avenue. It sounds so fancy. Giant building in the center of Park Avenue, which separates Park Avenue North from Park Avenue South. So I'm driving up Park Avenue, the southern portion. And then you kind of drive through this building, which is really Grand Central Station. And then you come out on the other side and then you're on like the Park Avenue that everybody thinks about. The downtown Park Avenue is just like Chipotle and Bank of America. There's nothing fancy there.
Dwayne Reed.
But as you're driving past there, there's a giant bronze statue. And I never know. I'm living in Manhattan my whole life. I don't think I've ever noticed that statue. And as we would drive up from the NICU, for some reason, I noticed him every single day. And then I noticed that the statue was of Vanderbilt. So, and he's the big cheese behind Grand Central Station and that whole thing. So we had this very weird ritual of as we would drive up, I would roll my window down despite the snow or weather. And I would say, good morning, Cornelius. Because he's Cornelius Vanderbilt. And there is still not a day in my life that I will pass that statue without rolling down my window and saying, good morning, Cornelius. And now my twins do it too.
Oh, that's
so great.
And I
get mad if they don't. Like, I'm like, why did you say good morning to Cornelius? Why did you say that? Like, he's listening and he's going to be offended. So that was our crazy ritual. I would go up in the morning, spend time with both of them for the whole workday. Then my husband would come. We'd kind of like tap out, changing of the guards. Yeah. And then I would go back home and rest for a little bit.
Smart.
And we tightened it up a tiny bit once Johnny came home. So my baby B came home at 14 days and I did spend less time in the NICU and came home. My sister wonderfully had just lost her job right before the babies were born. I don't know whoever says, oh my God, I'm so happy that you just lost your job. This is wonderful. Her office closed. She wasn't fired or anything dramatic. Yeah. I wish she was, because that would have been a better story. But yeah, she stayed with Johnny while I was with Anna. And I would call her and I would say, you know, are you feeding him? Same thing. Jewel, I did the same exact thing. Yeah. So I would call her at home. And she only, like, maybe a few years ago admitted of what was really happening while I was in the NICU with Anna. Because I was very like, okay, he has to be put down drowsy but awake and let him fall into his crib. And she's like, my sister's like, Nat, I literally never put him down for 14 hours. He was in my arms the whole time. She's like, the only time that I ever put him down was when I would send you a picture to tell you that I put him down. But she's like, then I would pick him right up. She's like, I would even go to the bathroom with him. Like, I would take him into the bathroom in his bouncy seat. She was not, she would not take her eyes off him, which is so funny because I was virtually doing the same thing for Brad in the NICU. That's so super crazy.
Sisters are the best.
Another thing that I wanted to mention to people was that there is this super cool new app that's out right now, and it's called Headspace. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I only heard of it recently by watching you guys go to your event there. It looked amazing. I heard about it all. I love it.
We're spreading the word. It's not really revolutionary. It's, you know, an 18 billion year old tradition of just being mindful and stuff. I think it's especially important during pregnancy. And Jewel, this is something for your clients too, by the way. They have a whole like module just on pregnancy, like stress and anxiety during pregnancy. It's super crazy.
It's so relevant in 2018.
But now I think that it's less like, oh my God, she's super crunchy. She meditates. It's like, I don't want to have a nervous breakdown. So I listen to some guy talk to me in my head for 15 minutes. You know, we think about, if you break your leg, you go to the doctor and then you go to physical therapy. But sometimes your mind gets out of whack and the NICU is one of those places where your mind may get a little wacky. So my mind's still wacky, still has not officially made it through the NICU days. I'm still there. But I wish that I would have taken more time, even in the NICU, to try to be a tiny bit more present. Because I was so postpartum, absolutely not in the best mindset. I feel like if someone would have said to me, get your mind together, here's what you have to do. You know, we did an interview, we did a Facebook Live with Dr. Dina from Premier Pediatrics. Yeah. And we talked all about postpartum mood disorders. And what I was like, I had like this moment when I was like, oh my gosh, I just realized most pediatricians diagnose a postpartum mood disorder. However, I didn't go to my pediatrician for like a month.
Right.
Because I was with the doctors in the NICU. So the nurses in the NICU are now, they're definitely more mindful and trained to be on alert for postpartum issues. But I want to say, you know what? Don't wait. Take the bull by the horns kind of thing and figure out ways, whether it's just the music, whether it's just a breathing, whether it's literally going to the bathroom, shutting the stall door and not really doing number one or two and just having a moment to yourself. But figure out a way and start practicing during your pregnancy, I think, of just having some kind of ritual of pulling your brains together, which I think is really a good idea. But I wanted to tell you about that. I think I might as well just tell you live. During our discussion.
I think it's so important because I think self-care is something just in general. And you know, self-care isn't just, you know, our bodies, it's our minds. And we forget about that when you become this mother and then you're this NICU mom. And you know, it's there was a moment where it felt for a long time, it was like a badge of honor to be like a martyr as a mom. And I don't think we need to be any of that, especially when you have two babies to be taken care of. And it's interesting, you know, self-care in the NICU can be challenging, but you know, whether it's going into the bathroom stall or most hospitals will have some sort of little courtyard, or maybe it's the chapel for you, or maybe it's, you know, a little trick in the NICU is they all keep pantry stocked with cereal and crackers and the number of the number of graham crackers that I ate in my life out of the
graham crackers and ginger ale.
Graham crackers and ginger ale. But it's allowing yourself that it's really perfectly okay to get up from that bassinet, to get up mm-hmm. from that incubator, and to walk out so that it can stay mm-hmm. this happy place, that you don't get burnout, that you don't start to wear down your body, which, by the way, just yes. produce these two little human yes. beings. Like, you have to, you're not in the comfort of your own home for a lot of the day. So you have to find ways to do self-care. And I think that sounds like an amazing way to start.
Yeah, definitely. And can I just go like a tiny bit TMI right now?
Yeah.
One other thing that I've noted that since I've been in the NICU, and now we're well past this, when I remember that after the babies were born, I spent so much time there. I wouldn't always pack the supplies I needed for the day. And I'd be like, yep. crap, I forgot about this. And the number one thing that I would always forget are maxi pads.
I knew you were going to say that. Totally.
Like, why isn't that? There should be like a bulletin board somewhere in the NICU that's like,
yeah.
don't forget your maxi pads tomorrow. You know, we remember to like wash our hands, and you remember to eat and drink your water. But I always forget yeah. them. And then I knew that the hospital, the ones that were there were horrendous. So I kept running to the drugstore and spending like $10 a day to go get the ones that I wanted. So yeah, please. Quick tip. Bring your maxi pads.
Well, that's the thing you forget is, you know, I was lucky enough to be able to deliver my twins vaginally. And so, you know, it's day four, like you're still wearing mesh panties.
Oh, yeah.
Like there's a whole lot going on there, and no one else in that moment is going to be asking you if you remembered right. your maxi
yes.
pads and your mesh panties and you're the 9,000, your, you know, witch hazel pads.
Yes.
No one's asking.
I started storing mine in the baby's drawers. I
what?
Did. I was like, can I leave stuff here? And they're like, sure.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, good.
Yes.
Another thing that you could leave there is if you have a bonus digital camera, you could leave a digital camera in the drawer and the nurses will take pictures when you're not there. And the funny part about that is I always thought it was a burden. And they're like, no, if we really have time, we'll do it. And they will take the silliest pictures because they'll stage it in a comical way because this is their every day. To us, we're like, oh, the NICU. They're just like, this is my office. Like, I do silly things yeah. in my office. Like you had, you know, with the hearts for Valentine's Day, and I had
yeah.
the Christmas decorations and music. That's their office. So sometimes they like to get super nutty, especially the overnight nurses. And they'll get
so
creative.
I have to tell you one regret that I have. I don't think I've probably never even said this out loud, but I had a very strict rule, and I don't know, it was, you know, where your mind goes. I had a very strict rule. I would not allow any pictures of my babies.
Yeah. I knew you were going to say that.
You
had maxi pads.
I did.
Had you with the no pictures.
Yeah. I wouldn't, I have not one picture of my twins with a tube, with anything. Like I wouldn't allow it. I was crazy about it. And now, like, it's so much part of
yeah.
their journey that
mm-hmm.
is a beautiful journey, really, when you get to the end. We're not at the end of it. When you get, you know, through that piece of it, that
yes.
I can't show them. And so
yeah.
it may not feel no. like a pretty picture. It may not feel
yes.
like a moment you want to remember. But I really suggest people do, even if it's just a few, to take a couple pictures so that you can show them that time of their life.
And you don't ever have to look at them.
No.
You could take the pictures and you can, I tell this for people during pregnancy, they're like, ugh. I'm like, you know what? Do me a favor. Just take pictures. You don't ever have to look at them.
Yeah.
Just send them to me. I'll put them on my Google Drive. Leave me alone.
Yes.
But in the NICU, I was taking pictures. And the reason really why we were is because I had so many days where I was separated from the kids.
Right.
That was the only way that I could see them
right.
was somebody would take a digital picture and then bring it to me wherever I was.
Right.
Now, fast forward, my mom thought this was a horrible idea. She was like, how could you take pictures? Why would you want to remember this? And I, you know, now, as we discussed, their first Christmas was in the NICU.
Right.
And my daughter had a feeding tube for the majority of the time that she was there. So somebody bought me like the sweet little Hallmark ornament, like baby's first Christmas. And had like a little frame. So I put the picture of her with the feeding tube in this picture. And for years, my mom would take the ornament out of the box and she'd be like, man, I don't know why I have this picture. And I'm like, Mom, that was their first Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to Photoshop something for her. So years pass and we're decorating the tree as a family. And my daughter now like finally really realizes that she does not look like her brother. So she's like, what is this? You know, like, what's this in my face? Why is this taped to my face? And I was like, well, I was like, when you were little, you really were not a big fan of eating old school style.
Yeah.
You had to totally go new school style.
Yeah.
And this is, that's literally what I said to her. And she must have been like 5 or 6. And my daughter is a very, very, very stupidly finicky eater that makes me insane. I don't know if you could hear it in my voice. But she looked at the picture and she was like, I didn't even like to eat then.
Oh.
That's what she said. Right. So where my mom's like, the kids are going to be traumatized. Like, how did you have
this?
My daughter was like, classic Anna.
Yeah.
That's what she is. Yeah. Like, yep, I hated it then. I hate it now. No, thank you. I'll break the mold when it comes to
eating,
snacking and food.
I love that.
Yeah, it was such like a positive thing. And that is when, if you're not sure that you did the right thing by taking those pictures, it proved to me that I did.
Yeah. Yes.
It was really good. So if you look, guys, it is definitely can be a happy place.
Yeah.
Sure. Is every day going to be, you know, kittens, rainbows and, you know, lollipops? Probably not. But there will be some random kittens, there will be some random rainbows, and there will be some lollipops. And when you look back in 20 years, truthfully, I'm going to tell you, it's in your power to decide the memories that you want to keep in that bank.
Yeah.
So going back to that whole being mindful, now I'm not saying that bad things aren't going to stay with you, but truthfully, Jewel, I could look back. And I could say, like, their first bath was in the NICU, and I could be like, oh, my God, their first bath was there. Then I look back and I go, oh, thank God their first bath was in the NICU. I didn't know how to hold
it. We had a professional doing it.
Yes, this was great.
Yeah.
It was like one-on-one training of how to bathe a baby. I absolutely love that. So do you have any other final tips for our people to get them to have the NICU as their happy place?
You know, the last thing I would say to people is, as much as we're talking about our experiences, their experience, just like, you know, as it is raising kids, it will be their own. And there's no feelings they should or shouldn't have. One of the things that, you know, I felt like going in, one of the things you do often hear about preparing for the NICU is to talk with the other NICU parents that are there. And they do have like support groups when you are there. And that was not for me. I was not the person that wanted to sit and feel like I was commiserating. I just wanted to be with my babies. But I did have a strong support system at home, which did allow me to not have to do that. But at first, I almost felt like guilty that like, oh, am I supposed to go sit in that circle in the NICU? Yeah. And I didn't do that. And you know what? That was totally okay. And that wouldn't have made it a happy place for me. Like, I did me and I did what I felt like was best for me in a time where my body was going through ridiculous changes hormonally and physically and emotionally. And I had two babies and I just felt like, do what's right for you, do what's right for your babies. And, you know, it's the first place you will learn a lesson that you will have, I think, for your children's entire lives is that you are their number one advocate. So you have to do you, and you'll advocate for them and you'll learn things and you'll ask questions and then you will have the best possible experience that you can have.
Abso-skiddly-doodly, neighbor. That is the truth. Now, there is tons more information over at twiniversity.com. We actually have a whole tab that's just called NICU Resources.
Amazing.
Because I don't love when people start researching NICU stuff during pregnancy.
No.
So I'm like, you know what? We're going to section it in a way on our website that if and when you need it, click there, boom, you're done. So we have that over on twiniversity.com.
Amazing.
Of course, in our Twiniversity classes, whether it's in person or online, I assure you we do talk about the NICU, but it is going to be minimal. So please do not expect to attend a Twiniversity class where we're going to have like an hour long discussion on the NICU. Not happening. Even though over 500,000 babies are born prematurely each year, which means before 37 weeks, right? But that's not that uncommon for us. So it's definitely there's a high percentage of twin families, as you could see by Julie, as you could see by me, as you could see by the thousands of twin families each and every year. The NICU is not a place to fear. The NICU is a place where they are going to try to make your babies be the very best versions of themselves, but they're also there to help you if you need it. But primarily, they are there for the babies, and do not lose sight of that. All right, guys. So if you need anything from Jewel, you could find her over at babynavbabyplanners.com.
Yep.
And you could stalk her on social just at Baby Nav, literally everywhere. And of course, you could click, I'll learn to speak English, Julie. You could click the links associated with this podcast. But I want to thank you guys for listening. And don't forget, there really is a ton more information. And if you have any other questions about anything in the NICU, never hesitate to reach out to us both at community@twiniversity.com or just, you know, direct message us on social. So thank you very much, Julie, for joining us today.
Thank you, Nat. I loved this conversation. I feel like we could talk this all day. I loved it. Thank you for
sharing.
Me too,
because there's so many things. I wanted to talk about water. I wanted to talk about like a real schedule, but we're going to have to save that for next time.
Yes.
So for now, thank you, Julie.
Thank you.
And to all my listeners, do not forget to hit subscribe so that you never miss an outstanding episode. So we leave you with, see you later, Cornelius. Bye, guys.
Bye.